Come on.
It says we're live.
It says we're live, but I'm not seeing it on my computer yet, so. Damn it, I've done this before.
Live on my end.
Yeah, it says live on my end, but I'm not seeing it on the streaming side of. There we go. There we're on. Yay.
Woo-hoo!
All right. Woohoo. We're alive.
What's
all right.
Cracking, Dan? How are you?
All right. We're in business. Hey. All right, everybody. I want to introduce Michael Donnellan. If you're not aware of who he is, he's been doing a lot of research into Atlantis off of the coast of Spain. Why don't you go ahead and yabber about that a bit, Michael?
What's cracking, Dan? It's good to be here. Nice to see you again. Last time I saw you was last month in North Carolina. That was
at the summit. That was awesome.
What a cool time. Yeah, that was great. It was great to meet you there. It was great to present our series Atlantica to an American audience, which was really cool. Basically, for the people who thank you for introducing me, for the people who haven't sort of followed what we've been doing, I am part of a team of investigators, researchers, and for the last almost 10 years, a good part of the last 10 years, we've been investigating a bunch of different features, structures, and ruins all over the world. And what we do, if there's a technology that exists, we have it, we use it. Everything imaginable, underwater scans, multi-axis echo sounders, LIDAR, all sorts of satellite scanning techniques. And this has taken me for the last 10 years across the world investigating different structures. And it's a long story short, I had studied archaeology in Athens at the American College of Greece. Years ago, never thinking for a minute that I would be one day doing archaeological work. Shortly thereafter, I moved from Greece to Los Angeles, and I worked in film for years, and as a visual effects animator and whatnot. And about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, I met my business partners with whom I work now, our team, and the first project that we worked on was in Egypt. The second project we worked on was a shipwreck in the North Sea off the coast of Yorkshire in England. And I didn't wake up one morning thinking I'm going to go out and look for Atlantis. I might be eccentric, but I'm not nuts, should we say. However, having said that, we're living in an interesting time where we have access to more technological advances in the field of discovering structures and whatnot than ever before. Satellites have only been around X amount of decades. LIDAR has only been around a certain amount of time. So all of these things, even scuba diving, can you hear me? Yeah. Even scuba diving, if you think about it, scuba diving is relatively new. I mean, that's only been around a handful of decades. All of these things are cosmically positioned in such a way right now that we're able to, for the first time, to really investigate places using these technologies. And that's what we've done. And about 8 years ago, after I'd been working with our partners already for a couple years, our head of research, Timothy Akers, said to me, "How do you like Southern Spain?" And I said, "Well, like anybody else, I think I love it." Why? And I was literally getting out of the water from having recovered pieces of the Bonhomme Richard, which is one of our discoveries, which is a shipwreck, a very famous shipwreck off the coast of Yorkshire. And I'm getting out of the water after a dive. And he says to me, "What do you think of Southern Spain?" because I believe we've found a bunch of structures there that merit attention. And so I said, terrific, let's go. I was living in Italy, and Spain is only a two-hour flight away. So I started the series of trips out here in 2016 in February. And every month I was coming out here, investigating these out-of-context ancient structures that didn't have any historical context in terms of the written literature. Why southern Spain, right? And there's a lot to be said in terms of this is very different from a shipwreck. A shipwreck is a single structure. When you dive at a shipwreck, you first of all, you go to the location, you try to see if you're in the right spot. You if you find a shipwreck, is it the shipwreck you were looking for? And if it's the shipwreck you were looking for, basically the trick is to register, identify it, and there you have your find. It's pretty cut and dry. It's not that easy, but it's more cut and dry. In the case of trying to identify an ancient lost civilization, it's a lot more complicated. Obviously, you have to really correlate a lot of different strata of data.
Give me one second here, Michael. I want to cut you off real quick just to address a couple things in the comments. First of all, I want to thank Nick for throwing out those channel memberships. Much appreciated. Second of all, the people that are saying that this is bullshit, that this is word salad. I watched Atlantica at the Cosmic Summit. And at the end of it, the evidence is very compelling. I don't want to spoil it completely. We'll let you talk about it as we go, Michael. But the end of it, the evidence is very interesting, very compelling. Now, I know there's a lot of people that have their wagons hitched to Atlantis is here, Atlantis is there, Atlantis is here, Atlantis is there. I've talked about it a lot, and we'll just get this out of the way now. If you look at where we are in the Americas, we have the Clovis culture. Everybody's well aware of the Clovis culture. It stretched from sea to shining sea. These people did not worship the same gods. They did not call themselves the same name. They did not share the same language, but they shared the same toolkit. So 10,000 years later, they get one stamp, Clovis culture. If you do extrapolate that thinking 10,000 years from now, we're the electronics culture. Us, the French, the Cambodians, the North Koreans, we're all the same culture 10,000 years from now. So in my opinion, there's going to be all kinds of different signs of these lost civilizations. And a lot of times they quite possibly would have got conflated because 100%. People didn't realize they were talking about all these different people, just like the Clovis people. They think they're talking about one group of people and they think simply about it. So if you think that Atlantis is in Rishat, for example, that doesn't mean that there couldn't have been Atlantis off the coast of Spain. They might have had they definitely would have had different city names, but history could have ended up recording them the same, especially after 12,000 fucking years. So work's been done. The stuff's pretty interesting, and just to discard it because you have your wagon attached to the Azores or something is simple-minded, and you don't belong in my channel. No, I'm joking about that. All right, having said that, carry on, Michael.
And you struck it perfectly. And by the way, I am fully aware, it's been 8 years of work, I'm fully aware of people who have their own theory. That's great. That's awesome. I'll start with why Spain. And first of all, Dan, what you said is very true. If there's anything I've learned from this experience, it's that humanity, which is to say our communal capacity of having writing, laws, architecture, construction, navigation, sciences, even cooking food and making clothes. What we consider humanity, I believe, is something that is extremely ancient and has existed far longer than suggested in the sort of classical textbook notion. Why Spain? Now, let's get back to Atlantis. You can believe in this idea or not. Over the last few years, I have preferred to use the term ancient Atlantic culture. What we are finding is, if you put the word Atlantis aside, I never really say we found Atlantis. What I do say is that we're finding clear evidence of this ancient Atlantic culture throughout the southeastern peninsula of Andalusia, which is where we are right now. When Plato, because really Plato is our Bible on the subject of Atlantis, because he's not the only one, but he's the one who really planted the seed. And he's the one through his two texts, the Timaeus and Critias, which I've memorized. I have those books memorized. I have them in multiple languages. I've read them hundreds of times. It's only 50 pages with the two texts. But the thing that's interesting about it is Plato describes this crazy story, and it's filled with detail. And the basic story, for the viewers that aren't fully aware of it, but I'll cut it down real short, is Plato, 2,400 years ago, writes these dialogues. It's like a movie script almost. It's a style of writing they had back then. Plato says this, Socrates says this, Plato responds with this, Socrates responds with this. It's very much like a movie script, but written, they were called dialogues. They were written in sort of a thought-provoking manner.
Yeah, and a little bit of propaganda pieces usually. They usually had a little bit of an underlying, they're trying to push an idea.
Always. And in this case, you're absolutely right, because a great part of those two texts is to sort of show the magnificence of ancient Greece, and that ancient Greece had a far older predecessors, so to speak. So it was also, like you said, a bit of propaganda thrown in there in order to show the valor of Greece, the valor of ancient theologies. And he talks about his great-great-great uncle who lived, I think it was 120 years earlier, Solon. Solon was the famous lawmaker of Athens. He wasn't some fool. He was a man who was highly revered in ancient Greece, had gone to Egypt. Now, remember, this is 2,400 years ago. The ancient Greeks revered Athens. The ancient Greeks revered Egypt, the same way that the ancient Romans revered the Greeks. And Solon finds himself in the region of Sais in Egypt, where he meets up with the ancient priests of Egypt. Now, we have to remember that Egypt back then, socially, was extremely different to Egypt now. And these priests tell him a fascinating story. They say, Solon, you Greeks don't even know your own history. You're like children. He says, you don't know that you Greeks, just like us Egyptians, that's a curious thing, have ancestors that came from outside of the Straits of Heracles in the regions the Greeks call Gades, which is very well known for the province that we live in right now called Cadiz, where they speak the language of Gadeiros. The islands here were called the Gadeiras. And he tells us, there's no coincidence, he tells us that this ancient culture controlled the vast majority of the Mediterranean all the way out into the Atlantic, and that their capital city, so he goes into the whole family tree of who it was, Poseidon and his wife Cleito, and they had five sets of twins, and the oldest twins were Emulus and Atlas, or Emulus, otherwise known as Gadeiros. And to them, to each of these five sets of twins was, or to each of the twins was given a capital city, so to speak. Then he goes on to speak about this area, and he goes into tremendous detail. And geographically, he points it right here, and he says the capital cities were in this area, in the region known as Gadeiros. And he describes this flat plain, which is right. This is why I decided, instead of doing the podcast at my house, which is right over there, I thought, let me just walk outside and show Dan and the audience where Plato was talking about. He says there was this flat plain that stretch right to the mountains in the north, which is exactly what we have here, in view of the Atlas Mountains, essentially, which the Atlas Mountains are right across here, 14 kilometers across the straits. And he goes on to tell you about this coastline filled with cities and merchants and ports and navigation and boats, and he pictures it as a depicts it as a magnificent place with, he says, barbaric, the architecture was to some degree barbaric, which in ancient terms would have meant slightly foreign to the Greeks. It would have been a little bit unusual. Barbaric meant sort of peculiar, unusual, foreign. And then he goes ahead to describe this, much like Venice, where the city of Venice is built in a lagoon, on artificially made islands. But in the case of the capital city, Plato describes it as having been this concentric, circular island capital city that had was made up of land, water, so canals, with a central Acropolis, or a higher raised area. He goes on to talk about this temples and wells of spring water, warm and cold water, and he talks about the buildings and the richness, the wealth of Atlantis. We have hundreds of mines, all scattered. Some of the oldest mines, the Rio Tinto mines, are within an hour's drive from here. And they're massive mines, and they're some of the oldest mines in the world, having been excavated for what we know for a lot farther than 5,000 years, a lot further back. And being open-faced mines, the oldest part has long since disappeared because that's what they already got rid of.
One second, Michael. I just want to address the chat real fast again, just really quickly. Sam from Illegitimate Scholar, he mentioned that humanity's been around for like a lot longer from an anthropological sense. So I think you were talking about from a historical sense, if I'm not mistaken, right, Michael? You weren't talking like humanity's only been around for 20,000 years or so, or 5,000 years or so historically.
I mean, totally. If you think about it, if you think
just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, no, completely. The Earth, you know, it's funny. Here's the best way I can describe it. When I started, when drones first came out, 10 years ago, a little bit longer, I was using them mostly for cinematographical purposes, to shoot beautiful shots, you know? Because when drones came out, I remember before they came out, if I wanted to do an aerial shot for a movie we were working on, I had to hire a helicopter. It was expensive.
Yeah.
And it wasn't only expensive, it was limited. You couldn't, with a drone, you have access to certain, you can get closer than you can with a with an aircraft, and you can get many more. It's a whole different animal. However, fast forward a couple years into me flying drones, I started flying drones not only for beautiful scenery, I started to fly drones for surveying, archaeological research, surveying, research. And one day something struck me. We were in a field and we were looking for a Roman fortress that had been in this field. And we saw it on the satellites. And the next step, there's always a process to how we do our research. The first step is pure book research, you know, just researching ancient texts. Where could this fortress have been if it's not, if it seems to have disappeared? Or where is that shipwreck? Where was it last registered before it went down? You know, how has the coastline changed geologically in the last 2,000 years? So there's all these bits of data that we have to consider before taking the next step. The next step is, if it's on land, we go there with drones, with permissions, and we point our cameras down and we try to see if we can identify what we saw with the satellites. Then the third step is it what we think it might be?
Or can it be boots on the ground?
Sometimes a good 15, not that much, even 15, 10% of the time, it is something, because we never go to a place that just doesn't show anything with the satellite. But if it is something, there's a 10%, 15% chance where we go there and it turns out to be maybe something modern.
Yeah.
That's fine. And we got some structures here, which are actually from the Spanish Civil War, which look really exciting, but they're not that old.
Yeah. let me just a couple more here, and I'll let you get back to the narrative. We got a super chat from Risen Karu, who says, "Hey, Solon, you Greeks are weebs for Egypt." So that's definitely good. Yes. If you don't know what a weeb is, it's the you Greeks are weebs. Solon, you Greeks are weebs for Egypt. And weebs like weeboo, right? $0 to shave my beard, says Tammy. That's going to cost a little more than that. Sorry, guys. just a few more bucks. All right. And then we found Troy. Yes. Okay. I just don't want to just ask where all the shipwrecks are. God damn it. Okay. So sorry. I just I want to let you get back to where you were at. I just don't want to make sure and you know the people that are making comments here. Okay. So. You were talking about the layout of Atlantis, and that was interesting because I don't want to do too many spoilers, but you, at the end of it, you had some pretty interesting layouts that you guys had found with your research.
Yes.
That line up really well.
What I started to learn with drones is that when you look at the surface of the Earth, when there's a structure in embedded in soil, you start to realize that it's a bit like skin. It's a little bit like human skin. And ruins essentially become like scars. So the Earth, in some incredible cosmic manner, the Earth, the planet we live on, is some sort of a living organism. And the skin is like the Earth itself, reabsorbs itself, it recycles itself. So the reason I'm saying this is to answer the other guy's point a little bit about the age of humanity. The complexity that we have facing the research of ancient civilizations is that after a certain amount of time, X amount of years, unless those structures are well and truly buried out of sight and out of mind, the Earth recycles them. That's just the way it is. You know, people think, oh, we haven't found any tools of, well, a little bit, yes, but metal stuff is the second oxidation attacks a piece of iron, within a short time it's gone. So people were so surprised when they found the Antikythera mechanism in a shipwreck in Greece, and they were like, oh my god, these people actually had clockwork. Well, that's because that's one of the few things that survived.
Imagine
how many Volkswagen Beetles, the original one, how many of those do you think they made?
Well, probably a billion. I mean, not quite a billion. Right? But 10 million it's at least.
Millions, yeah. Right? Where are they all?
Yeah, dumped in landfills, yeah.
Landfills, you know?
To take that a step further, the Antikythera mechanism was found alongside several very expensive pieces of sculpture. Had it been pulled out by itself or without these things that are worth a lot of money, there's a really good chance that it would have been just like, hey, that's really fucking cool. Just sell that to the rich guy. I'd never be in a museum, yes, and we'd never know, yes, about it. Exactly. So that's that, and that wouldn't be the first time. There was a guy, I drives you up the wall because I can never remember his name, but he collected a certain type of South American pottery that was, you know, pre-Columbian. And when he died, his wife donated his entire collection to the local museum, and it was the first. Yeah. He had every known example.
Was he the guy that found a cave filled with these things?
I want to think that drives me at the wall. I know you talk.
It's true though. It's just the way it is.
People think it's just false, right?
So yeah, no, it's true. And the things that we're finding here, and I think you had a chance to see a reduced version of the first series. You haven't seen the whole extreme amount of work that we have in this area, because obviously for the presentation purposes, I wanted to make it a little bit more concise. The structures that we're finding here are so old that the only reason they've survived is either because...
Oh, no.
And by the way, this ocean that we have here, this can you see it? Did it cut out?
Yeah, I lost you there for a second. Sorry.
Am I breaking up? Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you, but it's the video staggering right now.
The ocean front here is very unusual. And the reason I came out here is because I do want to show you and the viewers a little bit of the peculiarities of, in fact, we're right in front of some 2,000-year-old ruins here. I don't know if you can see them in the distance. I can try to walk up there in a minute. The tide is going lower. But one of the fascinating things about the geology of this particular piece of coastline is that we're on two tectonic plates. So the water here, we have these crazy tides that go out for miles and miles, and the water's not very deep. And then it drops tremendously into the chasms of the Atlantic. But the ancient people took advantage of this. They knew that. And so part of the reason the structures that we're finding that are very ancient are still preserved is because they've been out of sight and out of mind. The ones that we have under the water are in such turbid water, such cloudy, the visibility is very difficult, very complicated place to dive. But that very visibility, that lack thereof of visibility, has been the one thing that has kept some of these structures safe and sound. Earlier, somebody, when we first logged in, somebody right away said, why aren't there things in the land? There are. When people see what we have been discovering, we've discovered everything from stuff under the water all the way to miles inland that all coincide with this ancient Atlantic culture that seems to have been categorically has been destroyed by a terrible event. Some terrible event happened that put these enormous features out of commission for a very long, forever, really.
Yo, that actually makes a ton of sense. We've got people arguing again in the thing here. I'll just address this here, Laku Pipu, dumbass. You want some examples of people with credentials that do something bad? That's the kind of stupid ass shit. Give me some examples of a priest doing something bad. They're fucking humans, you numbnut. They do all kinds of stuff. Some people with credentials. We'll just fucking take this all to the Godwin's Law level of things. Some people with credentials work for Nazi Germany in concentration camps. Run along, dumbass. Just because you have letters next to your name, that's called an appeal to authority, as a matter of fact, if I remember that. It's a basic logical fallacy that only those with the IQ of a potato bug with HIV would actually portray and then, like, espouse. All right, sorry. How to get that out of the way? All right, carry on.
Oh, man. Look, you know another thing, man? It's like I urge people to pause their daily routine of coming back from work, from the cubicle that they work in, and planting themselves in front of the computer. I urge people to take a trip, go out. You know, I came here because of the project that we're doing, which is really the joy of my life. Do I have other projects? We got tons of other projects. We got a shipwreck in Northern England. When people see what we found there, it's unbelievable. When I say we, that's my business partners at Merlin Burroughs. Great, great team I got there. And what we have here with our divers here. And by the way, our team here is also made up of extremely, not only competent, but published, some of the top scholars in their field, who are all slowly but surely, there's this community. Like, I'll give you an example, Dan. You and I had that interesting, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but there was that interesting panel that we had. Remember there at the Cosmic Summit?
The debate at the Cosmic Summit that I wish would have gone longer.
Yeah, and you know what? Normally I'm like this, how I am right now. That particular day, I had taken my filter off. Mm-hmm. I'd taken my filter off, and I just, what I'm getting at is I had a conference here about 2 weeks after, here in Spain, 2 weeks after our conference in North Carolina. And there was a giant difference. And the difference was that the panel that we had over there had five or six of us, I can't remember, and each one with their own view, but all very distinct views.
Yeah.
Some saying they don't think it did exist. Some people saying it was in Africa. Some people saying it. There is a... The difference with the panel that I was on here is that every person that knows this area who was on the panel with me here, they're all experts who have investigated this particular area for this ancient Atlantic culture. And they all are on the same page. They're all on the same page. It's almost as if the people here who have done their homework, who have read up on this subject, are saying, guys, open your eyes. He was talking about this place. So it's we're actually building a community here of people who come from different backgrounds, who have done their own research, who have found their own things that correlate with the same subject. So it's getting past, we're getting past the idea that it was all a bunch of bullshit. It didn't exist. Something existed, and goddamn, there was something big here. That is for sure.
Yeah,
100%.
One of the points I bring up a lot about one of the points I bring out a lot about Atlantis, because you'll hear people say that it was all invented narrative for Plato to prove his point.
Allegorical, so it was, yeah, yes. Right.
And that, you know, even assuming that he was using an allegory to prove his point, if you hear the guys that today are screaming the West is falling, they invariably invoke Rome. They don't talk about how, well, you remember in The Legend of Zelda how Hyrule collapsed because that's fucking fiction, and they're not trying to convince people with fiction. So the fact that Plato invoked Atlantis to me says that at the very least his contemporaries believed there was a culture before, that there was a time before the, and when you read other civilizations in the region at the time, that was a ubiquitous belief. From the fucking 100%. Phoenicians, the Sumerians, everybody believed in some sort of flood that wiped humanity out. So at the point when we start like nitpicking that aspect of it, that's where it's just to me that is you know, they all say that they worship the sun. We believe that they worship the sun. They say that they had a battle. We believe that they had a battle. They say they hunted cows. We believe they hunted cows. They said there was a flood that wiped out people that knew more than them. We're like, and most of us don't have that problem. But if a few of us that are hung up on letters next to their names instead of actual, like, you know,
which is fine, you know, and you know, when there's always going to be, I'll tell you what, man. In the last 5 years since we've been, in the last 2 years, 2.5 years, we've really started to go public with our research. The series is in distribution right now, but people haven't seen the series yet. Once they see the series, even the most hard-nosed, whatever he wants to call himself or herself, they watch what we've done and they go, there's you know, you, even if you, I've seen, we've converted people from being complete disbelievers to being rational about the subject, that there may well have been something, wasn't a backwards something, but a advanced something, advanced in parentheses, it's always, but when I say advanced, certainly to the level of writing, certainly to the level, I'll give you an example. The oldest recognized civilization in Iberia, the Iberian Peninsula is Spain and Portugal. The oldest recognized civilization in the Iberian Peninsula, which is also shrouded in mystery, but is recognized because they have ample ruins and ample different things, also stuff we found, is called Tartessos, not to be mistaken with this thing Tartaria, which I see floating around the internet. That's a completely different thing altogether. Tartessos, the Tartessian people, were, for many people, considered to be the descendants of the people, the older civilization, which in our case would be this ancient Atlantic culture, Atlantis. And when the Greek historian Strabo visited Iberia, he met with the Tartessians, and who were the people of this place, and he said, the Tartessians are the most advanced tribe of culture that I've met in the Iberian Peninsula. They have laws that date back 6,000 years. He's writing this 2,400 years ago, which means 8,500 years ago, far or older than what we consider like the Sumerians and the Egyptians. These people from here already had writing, a writing that hasn't yet been deciphered, by the way. And he's writing that about the Tartessians. So here's the curious, there's all these clues. Now, the reason I'm mentioning, rambling on about this is for people who think that Plato's writing was all allegory. Well, it's easy to break that notion, because if you consider that Plato, his use of, his etymological use, his use of words, he obviously didn't invent Atlantic, the Atlantic Ocean. Atlan, also the word Atlan, the breaking down of words, the word Atlan appears in a great deal of ancient Mesoamerican and South American cities that had their name, like Mazatlan, that had their names way before the conquistadors arrived. And on that same note, the people from the other side of the ocean talked about these bearded deities almost that came from the other side, the waiting for them to come back. And another story which is interesting, when the conquistadors first arrived in that part of America, they said, holy shit, man. Well, maybe not holy shit, but they said Plato was right, because at the beginning of Plato's text, he says, as you exit the Straits of Heracles in the region of Gades, but not as far as having reached the other
continent, yep.
Boundless continent. So when the conquistadors arrived, they said, holy shit, he knew about this place. Which you only saw the first series, but in the second season, we talk about the Canaries, the Azores, the Isla de Madeira. We talk about Africa. We talk about the rest of the Mediterranean, Malta, the Sardinia. We talk about Egypt. This story is a very broad one, but the first season, which is what you saw part of, focuses on Plato's specifics as to where he placed the capital of this empire. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I always say it. Look at what we found and look at what he writes. It's hard to ignore.
No. Well, where can we find, are your seasons out? I mean, I know that what I saw was
in distribution
preview.
Right now. It's in distribution right now. So I'll be announcing. I know where it's going to
okay.
come out.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll put links. You're fine. I'll put links to your stuff down below, and then people can follow you and catch it then. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, brother.
Of course. I want to make sure that because I got people asking, hey, where do I find it? Where do I find it? It's like, Topic Summit 2025. Missed it, bitch.
It's the biggest question I always get, and the reality is, here's the thing about it. Every year something comes out on this subject. Every year we've been working on this for 10 years, and what we have found and what we are finding, and this will keep me busy for the rest of my life, man, but what we're finding merits international attention. And so the question of distribution isn't only for us as a film production company to get our series seen, but it's really to get our series seen by the most amount of people possible. So it's a game that we're playing right now, but it's exciting. And it's when it does come out, I want the whole world to see what we've been doing.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Yeah, that'll be fun. You can go ahead if you want. And you were discussing earlier when I cut you off, we were talking about what Solon portrayed about the layout of Atlantis. You got into the interior rings and stuff, and then we've got a live chat that I do have to talk to these people every now and again. I don't want to completely ignore my fans for some reason.
Look, we're gonna have another thing. This place has the most beautiful sunset I've ever seen. And you were talking about they revered the sun. Well, there is an ancient mythology here. Now, normally you can see Venus right up there. It's still not nighttime, but usually you see Venus right up there. Venus is a feminine name, but there's an older name to Venus, which is very curious, which is the Greek name, which is Phosphoro. Phosphoro is the same exact name in the Latin is Lucifer, Lucifer. Not to be mistaken for some satanic cult.
The morning star. That's
the morning star.
Yeah, the recorder exactly. Has the morning star in the Bible at times. So yeah,
the bringer of light, and the oldest. In fact, the city of Sanlúcar, where I live over there, has in their actual the shield of the town of the emblem of the city, the ancient emblem, is a tower with a star on top of it. And the name, the slogan says Luciferifanum. So in antiquity here, there was an ancient temple dedicated to the sun, to the bringer of light, to Venus. And then subsequently things changed and names changed, but the tradition remained the same. But to this day, the thing that has not changed is that drop dead gorgeous sunset. You know, so it's all, I'll tell you one thing. Every time, the reason I'm so utterly convinced of what we're doing is not just because of our discoveries. Those are proof on their own. But because there isn't one single thing in what we're finding here that sits outside of Plato's descriptions. If there was one thing, for example, I've met people who, and I have no doubt, there's things, like we were talking about this earlier, but there are things scattered about the entire planet that are ancient and I'm sure were active and alive at the same time as what we are finding here. And that they were in communication with each other. Why not? Absolutely. I absolutely believe that. But what we're talking about is what Plato was saying. It's like this place. I met a guy that was really involved with some stuff in South America, up high in the mountains mountains of the Andes, was in Lake Titicaca or in Bolivia, and I am sure that there are some mesmerizing things over there, and I'm sure there's some mesmerizing things in Indonesia. We had this conversation But the problem there is not that you have you found something there? Yes, great, no question. Is it ancient? Yes, great. But why are you jumping to say that it's the same description that Plato gives in his Timaeus and Critias? Because that doesn't quite make that much sense. Does it make it less important? No, it's just as important. But there's a lot. I think that the term Atlantis has been shrouded in so much excitement and hysteria that people like to give it that name. If you found something high under Lake Titicaca, I'm sure it requires more investigation, and I'm sure it's interesting, as well as Indonesia. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same thing that Plato described when he was talking about the capital cities of Atlantis.
Yeah, I yep.
That's the only thing that I have again. Not that there isn't stuff. Absolutely there is.
We got to address Rizin Kairu really quick. Says if the ocean used to be lower, the sunset did change. Yeah, that you're being pedantic, but if you give me $2, I'll allow you to be pedantic.
It's Congratulations. it's true. It's true. In fact, what was his name?
Rizin Kairu. He's a Rizin Kairu.
Rizin Kairu. Good question. Good question. In fact, I'll add to that. I'll add to that. So you're absolutely right. So its geological records in this area have been fairly well studied, but essentially, like, for example, Dan, tell me if you can. Can you see the walls stretching out there?
I'm losing your audio a little bit here, too. Can I see? Can I see what?
Can you see those walls stretching out over there?
Oh, yeah, I can see the walls a little bit. Let me see.
Okay, so this is to answer the question of the last person who just asked about the rise of sea level. Those ruins are what are called Roman fishing corrals. They think the Romans built them, but they could have been a little older. Let me go sit down again here so I don't lose connection. Those, even though they're Roman, they're still at the same level as we are today, ocean level, right? So if you go a little further back to the Phoenician times, so in a sort of a structure of like, the Phoenicians weren't indigenous to this area. The Tartessians were. The Phoenicians were basically a civilization of non-indigenous peoples from all over the Mediterranean, who had traveled and commerced with all the way to here. So they settled here for a while. They did trade and commerce over here. The Phoenician ruins that we find here tend to be around 3 meters below sea level. That's about 3,000 years ago. The structures we're finding are between 20 and 30 meters below sea level.
Oh, wow.
So that gives you an idea of we're talking 15,000, 10 to 15,000 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago. Another quick example here is not everything is in the ocean. There is a sedimentary level of an orange sand. Now, when you have sedimentation, you have striations of sedimentary sand. And you can see in a cliff edge, you can see these striated layers of sand. That's when sedimentation occurs gradually over time. In the case of this coastline, you see chaotic sedimentation. All of a sudden, huge amounts of this orange sand, inside of which we discover structures that are man-made, which is to say that it wasn't slow and controlled sedimentary deposits, but rather one cataclysmic event or a series of cataclysmic events that deposited and enshrouded, entombed these man-made structures inside of this sand. That's another indication that there was a tremendous cataclysm. However, back to the subject of cataclysm, we are on the tectonic plate. We are on two tectonic plates. We're on the tectonic plate between Africa and Europe. And the African tectonic plate pushes down on the European tectonic plate. We're on a tectonic fault line where this is an area that receives every year there are 9 to 12 mini tsunamis here that are normally not even registered. But every 600 to 1,000 years, there is a major tsunami here. The last one was in 1755, which is relatively around the corner, really. And in 1775, they had newspapers here, and people wrote articles in the newspaper that when they saw the waters, because there was a huge earthquake in Lisbon, which is a few hours away from here, the people, and it caused tsunamis in this part of the coastline. And there are people who said that when they saw the waters retreating, they didn't know what tsunamis were, but they saw the waters retreating, they saw a city appear from under the ocean. So this is the stuff that we're finding today. It's really crazy, man.
Well, yeah, that's the problem as I see it is we end up with a lot of, like we're seeing in the comment section, we get a lot of these people that are just adverse to the idea to begin with. And like you said, Atlantis gets lumped in with all these other things. And it is kind of
it's a real slippery slope. I mean, you know what? Hey, look, I'd rather have, there's certain types of people that can argue with everything. They're bored. They hate their job. Whatever it is, they get home. They're like, hey, I'm going to log in here and I'm going to talk shit about whatever. That's cool. I'd rather they be here at least listen. Going out and shooting, you know, can you hear me?
Well, yeah, you're back.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
At least they're here listening. So, I mean, make their own decision at the end of the day. I'm the guy, I've been here on the ground with my feet planted here for 8 years, 10 years. And I know that what we're finding is absolutely real. The question about what we're doing is methodology. We're using a methodology which encompasses almost every field of study, and we're being extremely meticulous about it. All I'm going to say is that we are finding things, and when people compare those things and they really want to learn, go download Plato's texts. You can download a PDF for free. download his text, travel the world, come to Europe, learn your geography, and you might start to believe.
Okay, one second here. We got a couple of things here. Can you ask your guest about the Temple of Hercules Gadatanus? It's in the same area. Are you aware of that, Michael?
Sure, sure. So, yeah, so the Temple of Hercules, also known as the Templo de Mercal, is a temple, the ruins which they found off the coast of Cádiz. So, just to give you an idea, this is Sanlúcar de Barrameda, Chipiona. These are just different names of little village towns. And then you have the Cádiz capital city, which is a 20-minute drive from here. And Cádiz, like Plato said it was an island empire. And the island of Cádiz is still an island, has some of the oldest, they call it the Santissima Trinidad of temples. There was the temple of Venus Marina, the temple of Cronos, which is the temple of time. And there was the temple of Mercat, or the temple of Hercules. And it's all right here. It's really very fascinating because, like I said earlier, there's nothing. If there was one thing in this area that I could say, you see, that's a big missing thing, or that's a big error, but there isn't. For example, I'll even talk to you about, Plato talks about animals. He talks about the horses and the bulls and the elephants of Atlantis. Well, by total coincidence, in the Coto, the national park over here, we have the oldest species of horse in the world and the oldest species of cow in the world. They also found footprints. They know that there was a huge prehistoric elephant trade in this area. There was an elephant colony here. They have anthropologists found the footprints of elephants here from a few years ago. That also comes out in our series.
I remember you talking about that.
The fact that these, you remember?
Oh, sorry.
The fact that the types of elephants that they had here were not just one. It was three types of elephant, including the Asian elephant, which they had cross-continental commerce.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's all really, so the Temple of Hercules is really interesting. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, now, Lisan Kairu. All right, we got another question. From you need to get a core sample of the clay and see if it's the same as the North American black mat layer. That would be good to do. We get send this to Mark and see if he can help with that. Let's see what else we got.
Hey,
here.
Mark. I
wanted to make sure and get the... Oh, aren't you guys thirsty? Of course we are. He's sitting next to a whole ocean. My God, you guys, boy, we got some really happy people just arguing and yelling at each other in the comments. It's great. You guys are having fun. Yelling, play nice. All right. Looking at Danny's beard.
I can't even read these things.
Oh, they're you'd have to, yeah, you're using your phone to film with, yeah, you'd have to look there. You're not missing out, but you're not missing out. It can be pretty frustrating if you're not used to doing live streams, watching these things, it can be very distracting. Poor Stig, he was having a hard time. Next time he's on, I'll have to have him put tape over the screen because every time he'd look at it, he'd just take something. Oh, you dickhead, you son of a bitch, oh, nah.
Good old Stig.
What is interesting, Stig, though, is how, like, they do end up, if you believe in Atlantis, you believe in that UFOs came to visit Earth, and then you believe that the Earth is flat, and then you believe that the Electric Universe theory is true, and it's like they just try to slippery slope this all the way into, you can dismiss
it's all,
these
it's
people.
It's all ad hominem. It's all ad hominem, because I could just, anytime I hear certain comments, my first thing is look up what ad hominem means, because it's a simple, you think that an argument is related with the argument, but it isn't. So
yes.
Just because we're talking about Atlantis has absolutely fuck all to do with the Earth being round or flat. It's got nothing to do with one or the other. But, you know, people have their little argument. It's for me, it's a quick sign of stupidity, so that's fine.
Yeah. Well,
or not
a lot
stupidity, but lack of
Intellectual rigor. No, you're fine. I'm with you there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know,
the thing is you get money for it. If you make a video that makes fun of flat earthers, your research is minimal. You get on Wikipedia and you're like, this guy flew an airplane up and showed the round face of the earth. Fucking game, set, match. Man. Now I'm just going to include a bunch of insults and a bunch of stuff that's more suited to stand-up comedy than it is actual scientific discourse. And I'm going to get ad revenue. And then you get other guys that come along. Like, we've got Flint famously flat out said, hey, you know, that Atlantis is the same as a flat earth, which, you know, even on a philosophical level, that's just like dumb as a box of rocks. Show me the place I can stand to view Atlantis.
if the Greeks already knew that the earth was round, that just doesn't make any sense, that comment, you know? It doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, okay, all right, they're moving on.
If you left out the word Atlantis, what sort of find would this be? How would it rate?
That's exactly what I like to do. I prefer to use the term because, you know, it scares people off and they start sort of, I just like to call it we're finding the ruins of an ancient Atlantic culture. And that's real. That's not debatable. That's a real deal. And if some people, I know what I find it a bit peculiar that Plato would give it this name with, and it coincides with what we're finding here. So calling it Atlantis, calling it Atlantis is fantastic. But if it scares people away, I prefer calling what we're finding here, our investigation here, an ancient Atlantic culture. And that shows a little bit more of a stability to less of a supernatural quality to it, you know?
No, that makes sense. And it is a frustrating thing. I mean, like, I don't usually get too conspiratorial, but it is like there is no question that the CIA used, like, the term conspiracy theory was, like, basically thrown out into the public zeitgeist in order to dismiss anything that falls. It's a hammer that's just used. If you're team, I get all the time.
Conspiracy theory.
Dan's not a skeptic because he'll entertain a conspiracy theory or two. It's like, dude, ask other people in the community if I'm a skeptic. And my comments are full of people yelling at me that there's no way the bases were built that simply. All kinds of, I'm not a believer in ancient high tech, so that puts me in a different cat. But I'm still not a skeptic because I believe that Plato might have been actually referring to something real, and I think that there's some actual evidence. Sure. Like Graham Langdon wrote this great book. He was there selling the book at the summit, but it's the naval holding statues around the world and how these show up in places where agriculture and metallurgy are frequently showing up at the same time as this iconography shows up, and it jumps the pond. It's on both sides of the Atlantic or Pacific, however you want to look at it. At that point, if you are an academic, that's a great way to put yourself in the crossfires. And if you don't believe me on that, look at Thor Heyerdahl. He's recently been vindicated. Thor Heyerdahl's just been vindicated. In the last few years, DNA has proven that Easter Islanders did in fact have contact with people from Peru, but he was lambasted for saying such a thing for 50, 60 fucking years because it's attached to Atlantis. The same people like this Laku Pipu who are in the comment section yabbering about nothing that they know.
Do you know what's interesting? You mentioned Thor Heyerdahl. I fucking met him.
Oh, you did?
I met him. I went to high school. I went to high school in Abu Dhabi in the 90s. And my parents had always very eccentric friends and interesting friends often who were diplomats, ambassadors. And we were always getting invited to interesting events. And it was something like 1990 or 1991. My dad goes, hey, Michael, we're gonna go see this guy, Thor Heyerdahl. He's doing a conference. And they actually had brought out a replica of the Kon-Tiki, which was his boat, his raft that he had made. And I freaking met this guy. And I never thought it was just a serendipitous thing. And now that pops up in my head a lot, you know, because I think, bro, you're actually doing something that's really, like, you know, we all have our ups and downs. We all have our good days and our bad days. And whenever I'm having a kind of a lousy day, I think about Thor Heyerdahl. And I go, look, that guy balls out, went out and did what he fucking wanted to do. And yep. It turns out he was right, man.
Yeah.
And by the way, one thing I just wanted to mention, which is curious, because you mentioned it earlier, ancient technology. That's a question that always pops up. Like, if this ancient civilization existed, well, how, what was their technology like? What kind of technologies did they have? Now, I'm not saying they had iPhones, and I'm not saying they had, but they certainly had navigation. They certainly knew how to build floating objects that they could sail around on. They certainly had an immense cognizance of the celestial bodies. They seem to have certainly known about, because what we've found aligns with cardinal.
Oh no, I'm losing you again there. Nope. Shit, I think I might have lost you this time, Michael. He was. Oh, now you're back. Awesome.
Oh, there we go. And minus the idea of them having laptops and lasers, I think the fundamentals of what they may have had might have been advanced in the sense of pretty impressive. You know, look at Roman engineering, look at the Greeks' methods of the weapons of war, you know, the catapults that they had. They had these huge, huge machines, you know, that were maybe not quite as refined firepower as what we have now. But, I mean, they had machines that could launch a fiery rock, you know, half a mile.
So,
you got to see this. I got to just show you this.
Yeah, well, that's beautiful. That's gorgeous.
I hope your viewers are enjoying this little chat of ours.
Yeah, I think they are. You're dead on about like the tech level. Like, for example, we see. I talk about a lot with over in Polynesia. If you got people that are sailors and they are talented at sailing the seas and they land somewhere, the skill set that they have of using extreme teamwork, of using ropes, of knots, of aligning things to stars because they pointed that fucking boat prow, all these things would translate into what we see on the ground with a lot of these megaliths. And it doesn't have to get into the realm of ancient high tech, in my opinion. As a matter of fact, in my mind, I'm not opposed to the idea of ancient high tech, but you got to take steps to get there. You don't, in my mind, you don't get to just jump from 0 to 60, right? So, I mean, you can if you want, but it's not going to be a surprise when people don't take you very seriously. You got to get there.
I mean, I completely agree with you. I think that it's happened in spurts. I think we go up and down. We're like every time there's a cataclysm, every time there's a shift in weather patterns, we have to remember that we're these little tiny fucking creatures that are stuck to the skin on this giant ball, and we belong to it. Whether we like to think that we're kings and emperors and sorcerers, at the end of the day, we're little fucking scrappity insects that have to depend. We are totally dependent on this ball we live on. So to build ships, you need a certain level of industry. To navigate, you need a certain level of, to get to even the stage of writing. And then once that's, let's say there is a tsunami, like it's a really nasty one, even let's say way worse than the one that we saw in Japan and way worse than the one that we saw in Indonesia and Sri Lanka and where was it? Imagine something that's so bad, anything that's floating on the sea is going to.
Yeah. Well, I'm losing you again for a second, but yeah, you're right. Did you think floating on the sea is going to be fucked?
90% of human beings live. Sorry about that. You're right. 90% of us live next to a body of water, whether it's the ocean or whether it's a stream. And so the second any really heavy shit happens, we got to start from scratch. And I think that actually brings me back to a rather innocent and beautiful thing about our species, which is that we're storytellers, and we're storytellers for a reason. We're a storyteller because when everything has gone to shit and we're living in a cave and everybody around us has died and we're trying to restart humanity and
damn it. The chicken, the internet doesn't want us to hear these words. Sorry, you timed out again. Sorry, Michael. You want to repeat that last thing you said? Well, shit, you're out. You're gone again now.
Yeah. Can you hear me? I'm back.
Oh, here. Now you're back. All right.
Unstable internet connection. What a shame.
Oh, it sucks.
Can you hear me?
I can. Are you back?
You're there. There you are.
Can you hear me now? Oh, shit. Now you're gone again. Ah, damn it. No.
Crap. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just teleported.
There you are.
All right, there we go.
I'm here.
He's back. No,
what I was basically saying is that every time that something really, truly horrible happens, it's our storytelling capacities that keeps things alive. So imagine people. This is another crazy thing. We have in the Sierra Nevada, in the Sierra de Cadiz, which is the mountain ranges of this area, we have thousands of prehistoric man-made caves. And imagine these poor bastards that are trying to survive because their whole coastline has been totally destroyed. And they're carving out these caves and they're trying to survive, the Younger Dryas period, the documentation of the climate change for about 1,300 years after is significant. We know that the world suffered a really shitty time. So imagine these poor bastards trying to survive in these caves up here. And they're, we're loving parents and you have a kid and you have your kids in this cave and you're trying to tell them about your ancestors and that they had these things called ships. And they would navigate, and they had cities. What are cities? Well, there's these, and they had writing. What is writing? So it's, I think, in great part to our storytelling capacities as a species that we've kept even an ounce of our past alive. But on the same note, I believe there's tons and tons of our history that has been forever eradicated. Because it's just so long ago that Earth itself has swallowed it up.
Well, yeah. And then on top of that, there's also, there's all these different reasons for people to delete history. And, people like we look in Egypt and there's entire dynasties. I got a couple of quick comments. One, Nick said, make sure to thank Mr. Donnellan on behalf of the debunking community. And thanks to me, too. So thank you, Nick. I really want to say thank you. And thanks to you, Mike. Nick.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for logging in.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for watching. Lisan Kairu, once again, has a funny comment. This one is, he's clearly having trouble streaming because he's at the ocean where streams end. So, God damn it. The dad joke.
actually, it's a pretty good joke because this is where the river Guadalquivir here exits into the Atlantic Ocean. So that's a very true statement. I like the pun.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. we got Tammy's right there, that lots of stuff did get lost. It's like the reality of it is, like, not only do things get lost, but you got, like I was saying, things get erased. And we see, like, when the Christians went through Rome and they erased all the phallic symbolism and a bunch of the topless women and things like that, they depornified the stuff. And we see this kind of stuff all over the ancient world, where they erase things because they think they're doing what's right. But then, I mean, look at what If we would have had one modern anthropologist standing between Cortez and that bonfire, we would have a lot more information about South America, but we didn't, so we don't. And that, by the way, there, all you dickheads that are like, oh, what about the people with letters next to your name? The motherfuckers that burn all the stuff in South America and that, like, enslaved all of the Spanish, all of the Native Americans down there and stuff, those guys all had letters next to their name. They were official people. They were college boys. They were elites. And the dumbasses that had all their shit burnt, they were pseudoscientists. They were the ones that believed. And so if you want to talk about who's standing in whose footprints, you fucking dill holes, or you could have an open discussion. We could just talk about the stuff at hand, or you could, like, get all like this and we'll talk about individual stuff. And then you can go back to university on stolen land with stolen bones. And I'll just go sit back in the basement.
it's so funny because this really does open up the subject to a thousand. We could do 1,000 podcasts 1,000 times a day, and we still wouldn't cover all of these subjects. But I do love the fact that it stimulates people, whether it's good or bad comments. People get rattled up, but it's good. Let's rattle people up. Fuck it, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. It is. The more that people get invested in a thing, that how do you put it? In archaeology, when they say archaeological bias, when they say research bias in particular, they don't mean what we would think. What they mean is that, like, the Great Pyramid gets researched more than Menkaure's Pyramid, which gets researched more than Nan Madol because of how popular it is. So when it comes to getting people fired up about something, getting somebody into it, there's a reason that so many people are going to Göbekli Tepe right now. Graham Hancock said, hey, go check this fucking place out. And people are intrigued. They have an emotional response. And
they do.
I understand that science and emotion are two different things. But if you're trying to get funding, we didn't put man on the moon because of no Cold War. It took a Cold War to get that fire lit under our ass.
Yes, sir.
Emotion are important.
And by the way, on that note, it's so true. I'll give you an example I always use. I have two dear friends. They're archaeologists that both studied. One was a professor at University College London, professor of Egyptology. And they both studied at UCL. They're both published archaeologists. They both work with me. Sadly, Tass passed away, and Digby is, bless him, he's not doing too well. And they went to university together. This happens all the fucking time. And you can ask one of them, you could say, hey, Cass, what do you think about Atlantis? And he won't even look at you. And then you ask Digby and you say, Digby, what do you think? What do you think about Atlantis? And he'll say, well, interesting that you say that. You know what? I've done my own research. And it turns out that two people who have gone through the same academic structure may have completely different belief systems, even though they're both archaeologists. So it just goes to, and I'll tell you what, if there's ever been a world of more nitpicky backstabbing fuckers, it's the world of science. Well, even though archaeology isn't science, but archaeology and the fields of science, these people, you think they all communicate politely amongst each other with little note cards of like, hey, how you doing? Nice to see you. No, they fucking throw fists at each other if they have to. It's a very, I always like to say the way that Spielberg interpreted the cast of Indiana Jones was perfect, where you have the wicked French archaeologist and then the German guy and then there's one guy trying to kill the other guy. That's what they're like. That's what they're like. And I've had to face that here because even though I am an archaeologist, I studied archaeology at the American College of Greece in Athens, I never thought I would be an archaeologist. I never thought I'd studied it because I happened to have been living in Greece. And what am I going to study? Archaeology. I never thought I would actually do archaeology because then I moved to LA and I worked in film for years. And then I suddenly made a full circle because I love this. I love what I do, man. Fucking love it. And I have to say that every now and again, when you're talking to archaeologists here and there, and there's people who want to be in on it, and there's others who are like, oh no, this might fuck around with my career, you know?
Yeah.
So, no, that's just the way it is.
Leeson Cardew made another funny comment. He just clipped my quote down and said, we never put man on the moon, quote Dan. I said we didn't put man on the moon without the Cold War. So he just showed that to we didn't put man on the moon.
But we're cutting out.
That's how these people
were. You cut out. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear the comment. What was the comment?
He said he just shortened when I said we didn't put man on the moon without the Cold War. He just shortened that down to we didn't put man on the moon. Put it in quotes, said Dan. So yeah, that's how this game gets played. I know I'm going to be a racist too, and probably a sexist because we didn't put people on the moon, and I didn't specify the race and gender. These fucking people.
But,
yeah, exactly. It's funny though. He's just making a joke. But no, what you're saying about archaeology, unfortunately, is so true. And it's the thing is we see this in fields of study that the more the more room there is for somebody to kind of conjure their own narrative. When you talk about like just basic Newtonian physics, for example, you don't have these kinds of debates. And there's a reason for that, because the math is the math is the math. Now you start talking into theoretical physics and you start seeing these kinds of debates. People get skin in the game because they've wrote a story. And as I said, when I was talking to Graham Hancock, it's like they're mad because Graham wrote a story, a fiction. They wrote a fiction, and they're pissed off that their fiction didn't sell as well as his, even though they have the right credentials and he doesn't. But the fact of the matter is, we don't know. Oh, look, we don't know what happened. They write these ideas about, oh, this symbol means this, that, and they're just like, dude, they extrapolate off of threadbare evidence, just like everybody else. The difference is, look at the sea peoples for a perfect example. They'll tell you the Pelisset were sea peoples. On what? Well, we think they probably were because they think they might have been because the names are kind of close to the same. So basically off of etymology and the faith that the letter written by the Egyptian king was a true letter and not a bit of propaganda. That's the whole difference. If they would have believed that it was propaganda, the sea peoples would be bullshit. If they believed that Critias and Timaeus wasn't propaganda, Atlantis would be real on a mainstream narrative. So when you get these, oh, it's all based on evidence, it's like, no, dude, it's fucking based on faith. Quite often, it's based on faith.
Yes, and that's why archaeology isn't a science. Archaeology is a systematic use of as much information as you can gather to try to create a picture of something that's long gone. Sometimes it's easier because, you know, if you're studying something from the Middle Ages, for example, which is, you know, 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago, or even down to up to the Romans, we still have structures lingering on, and we still have texts. Further back you go, the more complicated it gets. It's just the way it is. Hey, Dan, my dear friend, I'm down to 10% on my phone.
Oh, okay. Well, no problem, Michael. Thank you so much. Send me links, brother. No problem. Email me your stuff on Instagram, and I'll dump all of your links in the section here so people can find you. I really appreciate it. Tell them where they can find you at right here.
Brilliant. And listen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Always a pleasure to see you. And the next time, I came out here to show people a bit of the landscape and the beauty of this place, but the next time I'll do it sitting down in my studio so we don't get cut off as much.
Not a problem. Awesome.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody that logged in to watch.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Thank you, Michael. And thanks to everybody. You take care, bud. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Catch you on the flip side. Bye.
All right.